Part 6, Chapter 5. Johnny and Kerr were engaged in ferrying mining machines and equipment to the defense base. The order to do so had come early that morning from Turl. The machinery freighter plane was parked with doors agape and ramps let down in the open field near the battle planes. A remarkably cowed Zit checked off a drilling machine as it was run up the ramp by Kerr. He raised the ramps and closed the doors. Johnny buckled himself into the co-pilot seat, and Kerr slid behind the controls. The freighter lifted abruptly and spun to the west. Kerr flew low and kept the ship steady, for none of the machinery was lashed. Johnny did not even look at the ground flowing by. They had made this short trip several times. He was tired. For a week, he had been practicing flying all day and studying all night, and it was beginning to show. His headache, however, came from the text, teleportation in relation to manned and drone flight. The flight part of it was far less interesting than teleportation. He felt that if he could grasp that, he might be able to do something to avert the fate he knew would come someday. The mathematics of the text were quite beyond him. They were cyclomathematics, a long way in advance of what he had studied. The symbols made his head spin. The history section at the start of the book was perfunctory. It simply stated that 100,000 years ago, a cyclophysicist named N had untangled the riddle. Prior to this, it was thought that teleportation consisted of converting energy and matter to space, and then reconverting it in another place so it would assume its natural form. But this had never been proven. N had apparently found that space could exist entirely independent of time, energy, or mass, and that all these things were actually separate items. Only when combined did they make up a universe. Space was dependent only upon three coordinates. When one dictated a set of space coordinates, one shifted space itself. Any energy or mass contained in that space thereupon shifted with that space shift. In the matter of a motor, such as this freighter had, it was just an enclosed housing in which space coordinates could be changed. As the coordinates changed, the housing was forced to go along, and this gave the motor power. That explained why these planes were run by a switchboard and not a thrust through the air. They didn't have to have wings or controls. Much smaller housings in the tail and on each side had similar sets of coordinates fed into them to climb and bank. A series of coordinates were progressively fed to the main motor, and it simply went forward or backward as the housed space occupied each set of coordinates in turn. Teleportation over vast distances worked the same way. Matter and energy were pinned to the space, and when it was exchanged with another space, they simply changed too. Thus, matter and energy would seem to disappear in one place and appear in another. They didn't actually change. Only the space did. Johnny could see now how Earth had been attacked. Informed in some way of its existence, possibly from some cyclo station in this universe, the cyclos had only to fish in its coordinates. They evidently used a recorder of some sort. They cast the recorder out to a test set of coordinates and then got it back and looked at the pictures. If the recorder vanished, they knew they had sent it into the mass of the planet. Then, they just had to adjust the coordinates for a new recorder cast. In that way, they had sent the killer gas. When it dissipated, they had followed it with cyclos and weapons. That was how Earth had been wiped out and conquered. But it didn't tell Johnny how to reverse the process. Any cyclo station out there could teleport new gas or even an army to Earth at will. That was the point that was giving him a headache.
"You're not very chatty,"
said Kerr, circling to land at the old defense base, going dead slow because of loose machinery. Johnny came out of it. He pointed at the button camera that hung around his neck.
Forget it,
said Kerr, to his astonishment.
They only have a range of about 2 miles.
He pointed at his work jacket pocket flap. A much smaller button camera with the symbol of the company on it was actually serving as a real button.
Not 5 or more?
Asked Johnny.
Crap no,
said Kerr.
The security measures of this company are a pain. There's no recorder in this plane, I checked. What the splintered asteroid are we doing hauling this machinery over to this old defense base?
He looked down.
It doesn't even look like a defense base anyway.
And it didn't. It was just some buildings, not even a landing field. No bunkers anyone could see. Some kind of a strange series of pointed things standing up at one end.
Turl gives the orders,
said Johnny, a bit resigned.
Blast no, these weren't Turl's orders. I saw them. They were signed by the head of the planet. Turl was even complaining. He said he wondered whether old Numph had gone off his computers.
It gave Johnny new data, but not what Kerr thought. Turl was covering his tracks. This was Turl's project. It made him uneasy.
This stuff,
said Kerr, with a backward jerk of his head,
is supposed to be practice equipment, but for who? It's perfectly good mining equipment. Hold on, we're gonna land.
He punched the console buttons, and the freighter crept down and landed easily and level. Kerr put on his face mask.
Another funny thing. There's no supply of breathe gas with any of this stuff. Just what was left in their tanks. You're the only one I know that can operate these machines without breathe gas in the canopies. You gonna operate all these machines?
He laughed.
It'd sure run your butt off. Let's unload.
They spent the next hour lining the machines up in an open field near the largest building. There were drillers and flying platforms, cable reelers, ore netters, blade scrapers, and a single transport truck. With the items brought in earlier loads, there were over 30 machines now.
Let's prowl. We've been fast. What's in this big building?
It consisted only of rooms, rooms, and rooms, each with bunks and lockers. There were what may have been washrooms. Kerr was prowling for loot, but broken windows and wind and snow had not left much. Dust and indistinguishable debris were thick.
Already been prowled,
was Kerr's finding.
Let's look elsewhere.
Kerr clumped through the entrance of another building. Johnny saw that it had been a library, but without Chinko protection, it was mainly litter. 1,000 years of cockroaches had dined on paper. A queer, broken structure that once had had 17 points, Johnny counted them, seemed to have been some kind of a monument. Kerr entered a door that was no longer there. A cross was still hanging on a wall.
What's that thing?
Said Kerr. Johnny knew it was a church cross. He said so.
Funny thing to have in a defense base. You know, I don't think this was a defense base. More like a school.
Johnny looked at Kerr. The midget cyclo might be thought dim-witted, but he was dead on the mark. Johnny did not tell him there were signs all over the place that said United States Air Force Academy. They wandered back to the freighter.
I bet we're establishing a school. I bet that's what it is we're doing. But who's going to be taught? Not cyclos with no breathe gas, that's for sure. But up the ramps, Johnny, and we'll get out of here.
Johnny did, but he didn't climb up to the cockpit. He looked around for water and firewood. He had an idea he'd be camping out here. Yes, there was a stream coming down from a nearby snow-capped peak. And there was plenty of firewood in the trees. He walked out and looked at the trench where the last battle had been fought against the cyclos. The grass was tall and waving in a lonesome-sounding wind. He climbed to the freighter cockpit, deeply troubled.